Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, this is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
The Carolina Hurricanes, no problem. Hurricane Michael, that is a different matter. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network. My name is Tom Lang, and I'm thankful to be speaking to you after a one-week delay. Hello, Lightning fans. Times are good in Tampa Bay. Five games so far, four wins. Nice. But yes, we broadcast from the ESPN Tallahassee studios, obviously in the capital city of Florida, where my thoughts are solely with towns, counties, coastal cities to the west of where I live. Mexico Beach, Panama City, Mariana, East Point, you name it. There are some communities and some people who are going to be fundamentally different from now on. Their lives have been wrecked. The city of Tallahassee had major power outages, I think, as of yesterday, and we're recording this Friday morning. So as of yesterday, I think it was 95, 98%, somewhere in there, power restored to the city of Tallahassee. If Hurricane Michael had been 20 or 30 miles shifted to the east, I think we'd be in the dark ages here. Too many above-ground power lines and too many trees. But we avoided the worst of it, and it's hard not to feel fortunate and at the same time, oh, so sorry for those in the panhandle who were affected deeply by Hurricane Michael. So for all of you who are looking for outlets, there are many, many places that you can donate either equipment, supplies, clothing, money to the cause. I can't stress enough that our friends and our neighbors 1 to 2 hours to the west of us, they're in dire need. They really are. So with that, I will segue back to hockey. And since we last spoke, which was the first podcast of the season, a season preview Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, 10 points were available to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We procured 8 of them. Okay. Quick summary of all the games. The opener against Florida, lackluster effort, penalty kill. That's right, PK was exceptional. Shorthanded goal, winner in the shootout. All right, 1-0. Second game of the year. Good start against Vancouver. I thought we came out, we skated very well, just got off to a 1-0 lead. We're unable to capitalize on our chances, fell asleep, lost the game, 1-1. Last weekend against Columbus, and we haven't played many games, folks, compared to the rest of the NHL. It's a little frustrating. That schedule, the way it started, was discombobulated. It's almost like we started in Europe or something like that. Okay, Columbus Blue Jackets get off to a great start, 3-0 lead. They fight back in the game. We fall asleep a little bit, 3-2. Late goal in the second by Braden Point. Special teams takes over. A rousing 8-2 victory. You score one in the final couple of seconds. Four power play goals, 2-1. And then this week, Carolina played a really good game, I thought, on Tuesday night. The Hurricanes were playing their third game in four nights, coming down to Tampa Bay from Winnipeg. That's a long flight. But they played, man, and you can see why they're atop the Atlantic Division right now, or the Metropolitan Division, I should say. That's a good club, but we earn the win, get it done, win by 2 goals. Last night, obviously, the Detroit game. Detroit hasn't beaten us in Tampa Bay in nearly 5 calendar years. December of 2013, and Detroit hadn't had a single win of regulation or shootout variety entering last night. Hungry group played us very, very tough. We do win it 3-1. I thought we played a good first period, a good third period, and a lousy second period. So let's start working backwards a little bit. I'll just break down these last two games, and then I'll get into some of the themes of the season. Plus, I'll give you a bonus segment on the back end. I know I've been gone for a week. We're going to do an extra podcast along the way. We'll do 1 week where we double up, just to make good on making sure Bill Curry Ford, who sponsors this here fine program, gets all the love it does, and we get all the content that we want. I'll talk more Tampa Bay Lightning. I got no problem doing that. So last night against Detroit, I thought we came out dominated the first period. You know, the shot board doesn't always tell the truth. In the first period, we had a marginal advantage, a decent advantage, but I thought we skated very well. Came out, controlled all three zones of the ice, gave away a couple of chances here and there, but for the most part, we dominated zone time. We did it the right way. We played physical hockey. We were strong on the puck. Power play looked exceptional. And even though we don't tally a power play goal on the score sheet in the first period, that goal by Braden Point is essentially a power play goal. If I'm keeping stats, I call that a power play goal because it's continued zone pressure just seconds after the power play expires. So really, really good period. But then the second period becomes an issue yet again. We've had some good starts through five games, only to see our play taper off a little bit. And last night was no exception. I thought one of the key moments in the second period for us was JT Miller taking an offensive zone penalty. He had a rough night last night, and he looks a little bit lost right now, does JT Miller. He was a revelation for us after the trading deadline last year, coming in along with Ryan McDonough. He was plugged right into the top six and was scoring goals left and right. Right now, he's mired in the third, fourth line area. He's more of a depth forward who's trying to bring a physical presence, but he just looks a little bit out of sorts right now. That comes, ebbs and flows of a season. As long as you're giving effort, and JT is, that'll be fine, and he'll turn it around. But a bad offensive zone penalty where he falls all over himself and then grabs Luke Witkowski's leg for a stupid tripping penalty. We took three or four stupid penalties last night, but I thought the JT Miller one was the penalty that really secured momentum for Detroit in the second period. So Vassie has to come up big. It was 16 or 17 saves in the second period, but he does. And that's probably our most consistent player through the first five games is Andre Vasilevsky. He started four of them. He's got a 148 goals against. His save percentage is over 950. Exceptional play from Andre Vasilevsky. And we needed him to hold down the fort last night, because then in the third period, we asserted ourselves again. Stamkos gets a goal. Hallelujah. He's on the board. It's his first of the season. It proves to be a game winner. It's off of a broken play. Sergachev fires a rocket from the point. Goes off a skate or a stick. I can't remember. Kucherov kind of fumbles the puck around. He was in a good shooting position, but the puck wouldn't cooperate. So then he puts it on the tape of Steven Stamkos, 2-1 Lightning. And we would add an empty netter from Alex Killorn to finish off the game. All right. A solid win against a desperate Detroit team. Detroit hates us. We're the bane of their existence. It's 12 or 13 in a row of some variety that we've beaten them in the regular season. It's ridiculous. We win a ton of close games against Detroit. Again, nearly five calendar years since we've lost to the Red Wings at Amalie Arena. And if you're an old-timer like me, you remember Joe Louis South. Steve Yzerman and Vernon or Osgood, Darren McCarty, Sergei Fedorov. We could go down the list. The Russian Five, Dominic Hasek for a couple of years. The Ice Palace at the time, 80-85% red. I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was the loudest atmosphere of the year. And so if we could ever beat the Red Wings that night, that felt like a week's worth of accomplishments. It's funny how things go in cycles. Now we own Detroit. A lot of close finishes. This was another one. No exception last night. But they don't like us very much. And through, at that point, six games, they hadn't registered a win. So desperate team for two reasons. Detroit did a really, really good job of clogging up the neutral zone, not giving us too much time and space last night. But we responded well, and we fought through it for, I thought, 40 of the 60 minutes. And another good job by the penalty kill. We'll talk about the penalty kill in segment two today, because that has been a revelation this season. A surprise that is most welcome. On Tuesday night, the Carolina game, I was really impressed with Carolina's speed. They've got a lot of good players, and they are the new NHL. You know, there's an article, Joe Smith wrote one for The Athletic, and it was talking about Tyler Johnson's approach in the offseason. Now he hasn't had to rehab an injury in the offseason. He was working on his skating, his explosiveness. When Tyler Johnson was with the Triplets in 2015, it was new in the NHL to see such speed, such overwhelming speed. Tampa Bay as an organization was taking chances on smaller but faster players, and it was working. It was one of the storylines of the 2015 Cup Finals. This is the most entertaining finals we've seen in a long time, wrote a lot of national columnists. And it was due to the skill that Tampa Bay was bringing to the ice. Speed. Lots and lots of speed. But the NHL rule changes, and the way the game is just being played now versus in 1995 or 1998, speed wins. Speed kills. Speed is rewarded. Penalties will be called. on guys who can't move their feet. So Tyler is no longer this rare commodity. However, I will say this. After his performance on Tuesday night, you can see it on the penalty kill, even strength, whatever. His legs look as explosive and as fresh as they have in years. And that's really, really good news for us, because Tyler Johnson can be a difference maker in clutch moments. I'm not always the guy who talks about clutch performances, but you cannot argue TJ's numbers in the postseason. He finds a way to come up big in the playoffs, and his legs look exceptional. Hat trick on Tuesday night, of course, that grabs the headlines, but I don't care about that nearly as much as I do the explosiveness we saw on the first goal, which was fed by Matthew Joseph, shorthanded goal. But then the second goal was really where you saw the afterburners come on. That was a feed from Adam Ernie in the second period near the blue line. Tyler Johnson goes in, fifth gear, finishes the job. Good news for us that we have another top six forward playing at what it looks like to be at the top of his game. Andre Vasilevsky, as I said before, has been our number one star. Louis Domingue turned in a great performance on Tuesday night, made a ton of big saves for us against Carolina. That team, watch them in the Metropolitan Division. They are fast up and down the ice. If they get consistent goaltending, they'll be in business for a playoff spot. I truly do believe that. So much to get through today. So much to get through. But a couple of housekeeping notes. Once again, Bill Curry Ford sponsors this particular podcast all season long. So thankful to those folks for jumping on board with the Joe Bolts Fan podcast to support Hockey Talk in Tampa Bay. It's my favorite season of the year. And even though I am very focused on football up here in Tallahassee for my day job, I get into two or three games worth of watching the Lightning and I fall in love with the sport all over again. So thank you to Bill Curry for it. And make sure to subscribe to the Joe Bolts Fan podcast, iTunes, Google Play. We're adding platforms all the time. And I'll give you an updated list next week. But we have many, many places that you can grab us and subscribe to this here podcast. You can also always just come to joebucksfan.com each Friday, and the Joe Bolts Fan podcast will be right there. So the penalty kill, that's a big-time talking point. The issues with the top six, looking at you, Stamkos, and looking at you, 86, Nikita Kucherov, we'll talk about that. The power play has been really good, some news and notes, and then an economic segment on the back end. We'll get to more of it. This is the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network.
Bill Curry Ford is the proud presenter of the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Come enjoy the Curry experience that has served the Tampa Bay community for 58 years. Their beautiful showroom is just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. New general manager Sean Sullivan, he's a Lightning fan, a Bucks fan, and he has great savings for the Tampa Bay community. Just go to the Bill Curry Ford website, BillCurryFord.com, shop and find their transparent pricing on all vehicles, and then contact Sean Sullivan and tell him you want the Joe Bolts Fan, Joe Bucks Fan discount. It's that simple. You will get an additional $500 in savings, no catch, no hook, and best of all, at Bill Curry Ford, they have nationwide lifetime warranties on new vehicles and pre-owned. That's just part of buying a vehicle at Bill Curry Ford. Check it out at their website, BillCurryFord.com.
Taking you higher than a Dave Mishkin goal call. You're riding the Lightning on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast with Tom Lang.
Welcome back to the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, part of the JoeBucksFan.com podcasting network, and presented all year long by Bill Curry Ford. Nice to be back on Friday, October the 19th, talking Lightning hockey with you. So let's get to it. The penalty kill. What in the world is this that we're watching, Tampa? The worst part of our game in 2017-2018. Penalty kill. Complete liability. It was passive. It was weak-minded. You could tell there was little confidence. Guys completely in between where they wanted to go, where they actually were standing, all that stuff. But yet, this year, we have ourselves, at least through five games, a perfect penalty kill. Holy smokes, guys. what do you make of it? Why is it different? Once again, I cited him in the first segment. I really do believe The Athletic in general as a publication is worth your $4 or $5 a month, whatever it is that you end up spending. But Joe Smith does a really good job. It's not a beat reporting website per se. They don't always have game stories, but they do have features. And so the insights are great. LightningInsider.com with Eric Erlandson does a great job beat reporting and features. But I have to say, really good work out of Joe Smith in The Athletic for the piece on the penalty kill and explaining some differences from year to year. And you can see and notice most of the differences that he puts on film, but he got a couple of quotes that I thought were interesting. Derek Lalonde, who was brought in the offseason, in addition now to the coaching staff, as Rick Bonus departed in the offseason. Derek Lalonde was considered to be the guy who would be the penalty kill guru. Jeff Halpern is now on the bench as well, and he was a good penalty killer in his time, spent a little bit of his NHL career with Tampa Bay and was always a good faceoff guy or penalty killer. So you thought maybe these two guys come in, and especially Lalonde, he's going to be the specialist for what we need to do on the penalty kill and revamping the attack. But there was a telling quote in the article where he was remarking on how most NHL staffs have one assistant coach or the head man taking a specific function. Think like the NFL, defensive coordinator. Well, he's not in charge of the running backs, right? Of course not. Defensive coordinator's in charge of the game plan for each weekend. Tampa Bay's got a new one this week. Coordinating all of the principles that we're teaching linebackers, linemen, interior, and rush ends, and the secondary. Let's all get on the same page. And then you have position coaches who are dealing with specific groups of players. What Derek Lalonde said to Joe Smith of The Athletic is, in Tampa, it's kind of a collaborative effort. Which I found to be an incredible insight. That John Cooper and the assistant coaches are all collaborating on better ideas for all facets of the game. You have somebody whose concentration might be power play, penalty kill, even strength, defense, offense, you know, wingers, forward centers, whatever, and defensemen. But everybody kind of talks about all positions. And after last year, where the development was, or the common logic was, that Todd Richards was the reason that the power play had taken off and gone to a place where you're seeing production commensurate to the talent on the ice. Okay, this is interesting. Whoever's doing the talking, whoever's come up with the insights, here's what we're seeing on the penalty kill. We're seeing a lot more pressure up the ice. So if the team on the power play starts behind its own net, if they don't have full control of it, if we just dump the puck down the ice off of a face-off win, we are going to pressure them behind the goal line. We are going to make it difficult for them to exit their own zone. In the neutral zone, we make sure to have one forward at all times checking and making life difficult. Don't let them get from blue line to blue line easy. If you want to battle against easy zone entries, if you want to battle against carry-ins to your zone, the best way to disrupt that flow is to do it earlier in the process. That's clearly what we're seeing here, is an emphasis on that. And then, of course, when the power play team is trying to get set up in our zone, they dump it in and they're trying to chase around, or they're making their first initial passes before they can get into their set, whatever it may be, umbrella, one high, we are pressuring until they get set up, trying to disrupt timing and create turnovers and easy clear outs as well. For my money, we still are a little bit passive once our opponent is in its set, but how can you complain with the results right now? We're winning more faceoffs, which is a huge part of the penalty kill. Obviously, we have the biggest part of it in Andre Vasilevsky and what Louis Domingue brought to the table on Tuesday. Your goalie has to make saves for you. We were on the brink of a couple of blown coverages last night against Detroit. There was one back post play where, you know, Victor Hedman left his guy, but thankfully he couldn't stuff it in for an open net, easy goal. But if you give up one goal in 20, 25 chances, I mean, you're still all-time great. So there's not a lot to argue with right now. I love the pressure up the ice. And I love the fact, and this will let me segue into one of our newcomers, I love the fact that we found consistent lines of penalty killers, and our top line so far has been Tyler Johnson and Matthew Joseph. Yes, Matthew Joseph is a keeper. All right. The hype about him in the preseason is real. His speed is real. And he has a knack. I liken it to Warrick Dunn, former Florida State great and a great player for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, too. When Matthew Joseph has the puck on his stick, he has a knack for avoiding getting squared up into the boards. He puts his body in positions to never take a full brunt of impact from the opponent. That's a really cool skill and an important skill if you're looking for somebody who can create space. Matthew Joseph can create space with the puck in his possession. And then if you're talking blue line to blue line, goal line to goal line, he's one of the fastest skaters in the game. A lot of raw talent that you can't teach. And that's cool. To see that we have more guys coming up the pipeline, you combine the impact of Matthew Joseph with the continued development of Anthony Cirelli, who flashed some hands last night in that Detroit game, some impressive stuff behind the net to generate a turnover and a big-time scoring chance. It was cool, but it was a big-time scoring chance. And a guy like Adam Ernie, who's also in the fold. He was scratched last night. We've got a bit of a logjam up with the big club right now, given how many forwards we have and how many good forwards we have. Adam Ernie, to me, is a long-term solution. He is a Ryan Callahan type, just very young, and somebody who doesn't know how to use all of his weight, all of his power yet. Adam Ernie will grow into his body, but he's got a knack, an instinct for being physical on the boards. If he is skating into the offensive zone, a defenseman gets rid of the puck, and he can choose, and he can legally choose between hitting the guy or skating by him. He chooses to hit. Not every player does that. I love that Adam Ernie does. And he also has some skill to go along with it. Does he have a shot like Braden Point? No. But does he have playmaker's eyes? I think he does. Look at the pass to Tyler Johnson, goal number two on Tuesday night. Yeah. Adam Ernie is a winning player. He's a plus player. So this is what Steve Yzerman has built, and this is what Julien Brisebois hopes to continue to foster, is an organization where you have top-end talent, a lot of core players that we've built organically through the draft and development, scouting. Tyler Johnson was undrafted. Andre Pallotta, late draft pick. But then you have the next wave. Here they come. Joseph, Cirelli, Ernie, Braden Point. There are more down there, more defensemen specifically. Cernak is one of them. Cal Foote's another. Sergachev we have with the big club. You want to continue to have answers because in a salary cap world, you're going to have to say goodbye to some people that you don't want to say goodbye to. It's the nature of the beast. They become too expensive. And that's something that we'll discuss in the bonus segment in a little bit. As to the negative side of things, the top six is a bit of a mess right now. You might say to yourself, well, the triplets are okay. Tyler Johnson scored a hat trick on Tuesday. Nah, again, one goal was shorthanded on a feed from Matthew Joseph. The second goal was lines were mixed up. Adam Ernie springs Tyler Johnson into the offensive zone. The third goal, yes, it was assisted by Kucherov, was into an empty net. The triplets don't look like they're in midseason synergy from 2015. And the top line of Stamkos, Braden Point, and Yanni Gourde isn't really clicking either. Don't think it was a coincidence last night that Stamkos' first goal came from Nikita Kucherov as the primary assister. Stamkos also was turned away on a point-blank opportunity. Great pass, I believe it was also from Kucherov, where Jimmy Howard is sprawling from his left to his right. They're going to have to shuffle some things with the top six to figure out the right combinations. But the body language of Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos' body language, not great. Not great. Stamkos is a streaky goal scorer. We know that. He needs to be a playmaker like he was last season, continue that development. If he does, then he's somebody who won't go into prolonged scoring slumps because he can set other people up. But it just doesn't look like it's clicking right now with the triplets and then with Gourde, Stamkos, and Braden Point. I think Yanni Gourde has been one of your best players so far this season. He makes a lot of winning plays. The goal he scored against Carolina, put us up 3-2, it ended up being the winning goal. That was off of a gift. It was a terrible turnover by Carolina in its own defensive zone. Andre Palat's there for the pressure, but it's just a bad turnover. And Yanni Gourde's on the winning end of it. But he deserved it by everything he did away from the puck and the little plays he made all Tuesday night. It was one of those, if you go back and check the tape, it was a well-deserved goal. I'd seen they left the Sorelli line alone, and that's fine. They look good. But maybe getting JT Miller up with Gord and Point. I thought that group of three was phenomenal last year when JT first came aboard. I know they moved him up to get him with some of the big guns. But it looked like there was a natural fit for Point at center with Gord and JT Miller getting pucks along the boards, winning pucks, and creating chances in the slot. Maybe they'll go to that one, maybe they won't. But the good news is, as we're struggling to find consistent scoring with our stars, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, we are still 4-1 and hitting the road. And that's where the Bolts go now. They go to the road for a week plus. Starts tomorrow, Saturday, October 20th, playing Minnesota, followed by the second of a back-to-back, United Center, Chicago, our old friends from 2015. Second in two nights. Then we take a couple of days off. We play a very good Colorado Avalanche team on Wednesday. That game on Wednesday is going to be the one I'll probably talk about the most next Friday on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, as it is a 9:30 NBC Sports Network game. And I got to tell you, in watching a little bit of Colorado hockey, and for whatever reason, in listening to SiriusXM NHL Radio, I've gotten three or four segments in the last day on the Avalanche. Okay, it's not just Nathan MacKinnon. There's a lot of good players on that team. Landeskog is a good player. Rantanen's a good player. Varlamov is playing well in net. They've got a lot of young kids. They've got some big defensemen that are young, learning the way of playing 20, 25 minutes a night. There's your marquee matchup next week. Every game is important. Every point is important. But the one I'm looking forward to between this week and next is Wednesday night. Did you know that the Colorado Avalanche nearly doubled their point total last year? They went from 48 points to 95 points. That's an incredible turnaround. And it looks like they've got no cap issues and a lot of young talent. So they're going to be an important team in the West. I'm going to do one more segment this week on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, and that is a bonus segment on the economics of hockey, and it was something I teased in week one. Why I like the fact that we did not execute the Erik Karlsson trade, and my thoughts on the Ryan McDonagh contract extension. We'll talk a little bit extra beyond that, economics of hockey, but I understand that's not everybody's cup of tea, so stick around for that if you'd like. If not, we've got three games between now and next week, Bolts fans. They're all on the road. Homestand, successful, 4-1. We need some more contributions from the stars. Andre Vasilevsky, Louis Domingue, keep doing what you're doing, and we'll be in pretty fine shape. We'll talk to you next week on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. Of course, stay tuned for those bonus features if you feel so inclined. Thanks again to Bill Curry Ford and thejoebucksfan.com. Features time on the Joe Bolts Fan Podcast, brought to you all season long by Bill Curry Ford. These are the Honey Drippers and the song Rockin' at Midnight. We'll be doing that a little bit next week as the Bolts hit the road. If you're going to stay up, I know I will, as I said before, for the Wednesday game. That's about the time it will finish. But it's time to get to the economics of hockey as it pertains to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Erik Karlsson, Ryan McDonagh, the state of the blue line on Tampa Bay's defense. I know. Some of you are more fans of analysis and takes and hype about what's on the ice, what's actually happening for 60 minutes. So if you're that type, you get a little queasy talking about how much a player makes. I can't believe somebody makes that many million dollars just to play a game. Well, goodbye. This segment's not for you. See you later. I'm a nerd for this kind of stuff, admittedly. CapFriendly.com is my friend. I enjoy taking a look at how much cap space Tampa Bay has this year, next year, projecting what they can do, who they can go get. It's like fantasy hockey come to life, but it's just a matter of watching and marveling how NHL general managers, how specifically Steve Yzerman, can manage major cap issues. The Lightning have spent a lot of money under Jeff Vinnick. We're always pushing the upper limit of the cap, which you cannot go over. And we're always finding creative ways to make the dollars work. It's a fun thing. It's a fun exercise, especially when you get to the summer and you're looking at free agency and how much space you have to get players to come in. For us, Erik Karlsson was the primary target of the offseason. He was, to some degree, the primary target of the trade deadline back in the spring, but it didn't happen for us. We got McDonagh instead. And I got to say, as I teased in week one of this here podcast for this season, I'm very happy we didn't make the trade. You may say, Tom, you're crazy. Erik Karlsson is one of the best defensemen in the sport. Offensively speaking, he has been the best defenseman in the sport for the past four or five seasons. I hear you. I 100% hear you. And I'll be honest, I don't know that there's another skater in the game, McDavid included, that I or MacKinnon included, that I like watching more than Erik Karlsson. I love watching him play. The Lightning fan in me who just wants to spend money and be entertained by what he sees on the ice wants Erik Karlsson in Tampa Bay. But the analyst fan in me, the one who wants us to be in position to win for as long as possible, the one who assesses what we need and what would be a luxury, that guy, no sir, no ma'am. I am very glad we did not make this trade. And here's the reason why. And why did I bring up Ryan McDonagh's name? Is because the moment we extended Ryan McDonagh, the Erik Karlsson thing went out the window for me. It made no sense to commit long-term dollars to Ryan McDonagh if we were going to all along go after Erik Karlsson. That's why in the summer when the trade was rumored to be done at one point, radio up in Toronto, TSN, had confirmed that it was done, all but the trade call. But there was an agreement in place between Ottawa and Tampa. It never made sense. Why would you commit that many dollars to three defensemen moving forward? Understand that while Ryan McDonagh makes about four and a quarter this year, next year his extension kicks in and he's making closer to seven, $6.75 million, whatever it is, per season for the next handful of years. You know, Victor Hedman's deal is already in, and he's making $7.875 million per season well into the next decade. And I don't know that even if Karlsson took a pay cut to play in Tampa, realizing that it was a situation where he was playing with a good friend and fellow Swede, Victor Hedman, realizing he was playing in a situation where he could be in a cup contender for a long time and he doesn't have any state tax, I don't know that he would have played for less than $9 or $9.5 million a season. So add all that up. If you're looking at three primary defensemen, you're thinking $22 million a season, which would be more than a quarter of the cap. The salary cap right now in the NHL is $79.5 million. Aggressive projections for next season and the season after that would have the salary cap somewhere in the low to mid 80s, which means you'd be spending more than a quarter of your dollars on three defensemen. That's not reasonable. Add on to the fact that Steven Stamkos commands $8.5 million a season. Nikita Kucherov's deal kicks in next year at $9.5 million a season. Quick math there. $18 million more. So now you're spending $40 million of the cap, about half of your cap on five players. The moment you made the Ryan McDonagh deal, the moment you extended him, Erik Karlsson went out the window. Unless you were willing to ship him back to Ottawa. McDonagh, that is. And I don't understand also why we were in such a rush to sign McDonagh to a long-term deal. When we brought him into Tampa, one of the reasons that it was a really attractive deal for us was that you had him under team control for another season. He wasn't a straight rental. 2018-2019, he was committed. You could take a longer look at his skill set and see if it fit what we were doing. Now, I don't understand the dynamics of the negotiation. Perhaps it was such that McDonagh's agent came to the Lightning and said, hey, if you want a discount, you get a discount now. You can lock him in right now. He likes the situation in Tampa. He's happy with the market. His family's happy. But you got to sign him now. If you don't sign him before game one of the regular season, we might test the open market and your discount is gone. Maybe the Lightning felt some pressure to get it done right then and there. But for me, while allowing for the fact that he might fit better into our system as he gets more used to what we're doing versus the Rangers, McDonough's reputation was that he was going to be an elite defenseman who could move the puck up and down the ice. He wasn't necessarily a goal scorer, but he's a great transitional piece. He could give you 25 minutes a night, and he's one of the better defensemen in the game. I don't think he lived up to that. In the postseason, he was above average. He was above average. But there were a lot of shaky moments, coverage in our own defensive zone, where I thought, all right, he's a top four defenseman, but is he somebody that I have to have locked up long term right now? No. So here we are in the offseason, where you're in a position where the money is tied up such that if you bring Carlson in, what you're doing is you're shrinking the window. Of course, if we made the deal for Erik Karlsson this season, next season, we would go from one of the favorites to win the cup to the prohibitive favorite to win the Stanley Cup. But if the finances are such that we're already going to be a favorite for the next five seasons, why would you want to shorten that window for the sake of adding luxury instead of necessity? What Karlsson brings to the table is more production on offense. He can be an elite defensive player, but that comes with effort and commitment. And to be honest, whispers around league circles are that he's a bit of a diva. You don't really need another diva in the locker room, do you? Think about the culture in Tampa. I'm not saying it's bad, but I think it's more about scoring, finesse, and pleasing all of the players, being a player-friendly culture, than it is about toughness and grit and working for goals. There's a lot of skill. What do we do well? What do the Lightning do well? We score goals. We light up the scoreboard. We are more likely to win a game by a long shot, winning by scoring five goals than by winning 2-1. We're not built to win 2-1. We're built to win 5-3. We're really good on the power play. Like, really, really good. Erik Karlsson is diminishing returns at that point. And the final reason I wouldn't want to make that deal is because it likely would have cost you either Mikhail Sergachev or Braden Point. Once again, in a salary cap league, it is imperative that you have cheap talent that can produce like big-time talent. Braden Point this year, for example, makes a paltry $680,000. He's one of your best players. He's probably your best center. He's going to get a bridge deal in the offseason, coming out of his entry-level contract, and he's a restricted free agent, so we're going to sign him for somewhere between, I don't know, $4.5 to $5.5 million, hopefully. That's not market value for what Braden Point brings to the table, so he's still going to be a cheap asset for a little while now. Mikhail Sergachev has 2 years left on his entry-level deal. He costs you less than, or maybe just a shade over $1 million. I have to go back and look. But he costs you no more than what a normal sixth or seventh defenseman would cost you, and he's capable of turning into a top four defenseman. You have to have Sorelli and Point and Ernie and Sergachev and Cernak when he gets called up, or Cal Foote when he gets called up. You got to have cheap talent rolling in. It's a salary cap world. Bringing in Erik Karlsson would expedite the process, would make it more complex and much more of a headache for us to live under the cap. You'd have to say no to somebody like Braden Point when his bridge deal is over, or you'd have to lowball Andre Vasilevsky and make that contract negotiation really tough. He's making $3.5 million this year and next. You don't think Andre Vasilevsky is going to command 8 or 9? We're going to try aggressively to re-sign that dude this upcoming offseason. He's proving day after day, 148 goals against, 950-plus save percentage, and that performance that he had in the Eastern Conference Finals. I know in Game 7, it's a bit of a knuckler. He shouldn't have given up against Alex Ovechkin, but don't tell me he wasn't our best player in Game 5. That dude's going to command so much money. If you brought in Karlsson and signed him for $8 to $9 million, you are hampering yourself in the future. You would need incredible growth of the cap in order to make it all work. Could it have? Sure. I'm not saying it was a terrible option. I'm just saying I'm glad we didn't do it the moment we signed McDonough. If we didn't extend McDonough, I would have listened a little bit more. But I really don't want to lose a guy like Braden Point or Mikhail Sergachev. Do you want to leave the future of this team for the next 5 to 6 years solely to Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov? They're really good players, but can you guarantee me that they're going to be in 4 or 5 years? I think you can guarantee me that Braden Point's going to be a good player in 4 or 5 years. I think you can guarantee me that Mikhail Sergachev is going to be a really good player in 4 or 5 years. So you see where I'm coming from here. We'll talk more about the economics of hockey as the season goes along if something affects the day-to-day operations of the team. That is to say, if the trading deadline is approaching and we need another forward because of injuries, or we need some defense because of injuries or a lack of performance. We'll talk about the economics in the regular part of the podcast, but I'll keep it solely to the bonus feature side because I understand that day-to-day, week-to-week stuff about what happens on the ice is much more important. But I hope that all made sense. The bottom line for me is the Carlson deal, while it would be awesome and you would have an all-star team, you'd have too much of one thing. If we're going to make an addition to this team, I'd rather have a bruising-type player. Victor Hedman is a perfect defenseman in all ways, except I'd like him to be a little bit more physical. Ryan McDonagh, not overly physical. Eric Carlson, he wouldn't have been overly physical. Let's bring in somebody who can instill some fear into the opponent, if you want to talk about that. As it stands now, though, the roster looks pretty damn good. When you have to send guys like Corey Conacher down, that means you're in pretty good shape, depth-wise. Injuries will arise. We'll see where it goes from there. But I hope you enjoy the bonus feature of this week's Joe Bolts Fan Podcast. We'll be back again next Friday talking about the West Coast road trip, and we'll see where we go from there. Thanks always again to Bill Curry Ford, and we'll talk to you next week.